it sounds like the title to a very cheesy self-help book, but from behind the bench to the boardroom, Tom, I guess that transition for you, how have you found it?
It's been good, Rob. I've really enjoyed it. I think that, you know, in our the very deep part of our soul, we're all a little bit philanthropic, if you will. I think sometimes there's opportunity that allows that to emerge, you know, for most of us. And for me at this point in time, at least, that's exactly what's happened.
You make the jump. You make the decision to jump. You do all, in your case, all of the media and everybody asks you. And that ends and you take a deep breath. You look around. What have you seen? What have you heard as you survey the landscape here in this country?
I certainly hear concern, you know, for where the game is and where it may be going. And that concern stems around things like the cost of playing the game, safety in the game, if you will, recognizing the time that it takes to participate in the game, not just as a player, for example, but as a family, of players in hockey. You know that, but I also see too that we don't celebrate the game enough. I don't think we pay attention to the great things that we've done, we're doing, and will do enough either. Sometimes we get consumed, whether it's forced upon us by exterior influences or not. I don't think that we celebrate the good things that we've done in the game near enough, and we should do more of that too.
What were the voices that you sought out as you kind of started into this? Who did you listen to? Who did you go out and seek advice from?
I guess lots of people, quite honestly. At the same time, not so many where I was confused by the message. Mm-hmm. I'd been through Hockey Canada, once before in a senior executive capacity, and that helped me an awful mm-hmm. lot. I kind of knew and understood what to expect, at least, so that helped. But certainly our volunteer board, Jim Hornell, Joe Drago, people like that are vital to the movement of the game forward from their position, as volunteers, executives of Hockey Canada's directorship and board of directors, if you will. So those guys, but also talk to Bob, frequently. Mm-hmm. Scott Smith has been huge to me, as has Mike Ross, of course, and Paul Delpart. All of them are incumbents, if you will, and Paul's been here for 35 years. So if there's a guy that represents the soul, of Hockey Canada from a staff perspective, at least, and having seen it all from coast to coast to coast, it's Paul. But I talked an awful lot to all of our staff, quite honestly, and to a number of different volunteers across the country. And I also talked to media, people in the press that, I've been covering this game for an awful long time just to get their take on where they see things.
You've been rubbing a lot of shoulders right in the grassroots level. I know recently you spoke to Hockey Alberta. I'm mm-hmm. assuming those are conversations that you probably have had across the country. How many of the small meetings, how many of the small groups, how many of the associations do you think you've touched base with in the last couple of months?
That's a great question. I don't know. I've probably done maybe 100. I think I'm 4 months on the job, and I think I've done 100 of those. I can't tell you exactly for sure, but certainly the message, too, that resonates with me, and this is the philanthropic part of what I'm all about at this point in my life, is that it's about making sure kids play hockey and they play it for the right reasons and they play it in a safe environment and it's accessible to everybody who wants to play.
What did you inherit? I mean, you sit down in this office and you take a look around this facility, but mm-hmm. the game, the teams, the elite program, the, mm-hmm. this, what have you got?
I think Hockey Canada's got a very envious reputation around the world. Sometimes, when you're in your own spot, you have a tendency to forget to do that. That's coming back to the celebrate what we do and don't be afraid to do that thing. But with that being said, I think that Hockey Canada does have certainly is recognized worldwide as being a hockey leader, probably the hockey leader. Through the hard work of, again, the volunteers across this country from coast to coast to coast, that reputation is only fortified by that commitment from those people. But also from a staff perspective and led by, Bob Nicholson, of course, and Scotty Smith, especially, I think that we're very, very well thought of, in the boardrooms of the IHF, for example, and other federations around the world. And even, with the National Hockey League and NHLPA, other partners that we mm-hmm. have and have to pay very close attention to, there's an awful lot that has to get done with those people as well. I see that in a good place, and I see my mandate as, continuing to improve upon all of that.
Tom, tell me about, at being at the top, how do you reconcile, how do you partition grassroots and development and the elite programs, mm-hmm. the programs of excellence?
The answer is going to certainly sound more simple than the action it takes to do all of that for sure. But really, we don't have one without the other, mm-hmm. At the end of the day. And I like the fact that in my meetings with the NHL and the PA and the IHF, for example, that everyone understands that, that really no one has a product, you know, from a professional perspective, at least, without, you know, grassroots hockey and the development of the game and making sure kids are playing it for the right reasons. And that's where I am. You know, I will at the appropriate times, and I have already, you know, really engaged myself in high performance and, you know, the elitism, you know, that exists, and we need it. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to identify with excellence, of course, and that's what those programs are all about, and that includes the NHL. That being said, though, coming out of the NHL and into this chair, if you will, I thought it was incumbent upon me, at least with whatever reputation I have, to make it very, very clear that this is a guy that cares about development, wants to make sure that kids play it, both genders, new Canadians, you know, whatever, you know, that's really, really important to me. And to recognize that, you know, this is not necessarily a staff-driven initiative, if you will, but again, it's done by the volunteers across this country, which are second to none in the world, in my mind.
One of the challenges that I think's out there, and I'm curious if you feel the same way, is not pitting one against the other. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and I know we're going to get into this about, you know, how are we developing young kids? Mm-hmm. The elite stream needs to be there. There's no doubt about it. And there's a certain capitalization business, mm-hmm, of hockey now that we see it at the development levels, yet still allowing for, you know, mm-hmm, kids who don't want to make that commitment or don't have that kind of, you know, gumption in them. How do, yep, we walk that fine line?
It's a great question, Rob, and I think it's one that's legitimate. It's funny that, you know, at the other end of that whole spectrum, how I think those that have chosen to not pursue the professional ranks, for example, but instead are school teachers or physiotherapists or doctors or bus drivers or whatever, can inspire the NHL athlete, for example. And of course, vice versa. Mm-hmm. There's a certain sexiness to being an NHL player, and certainly, you know, it's well chronicled every single day in this country. We know that.
Yeah.
But I think those very same athletes are in tune enough to recognize that those others in various professions outside of hockey can serve as inspiration as well. That being said, there are two streams for both genders, and you know, one is the recreation stream. You know, and then one is your sort of your competitive high performance stream, and they can coexist. There's no question about that. What really needs to happen, and it does in Canada as well as anywhere else in the world where there's volunteers, is the coaching education, the parental education, you know, the need to stay in tune with sociological issues of the day, are really, really important. And you know, to me, that's the thrust. And I think you know, as we move through the lineage of a player in the game of hockey, some choose to just play it on a recreational basis and, you know, pursue other objectives at the end of, you know, their playing careers, which could be at 12 years of age, for
right,
all we know.
Right.
You know, and likewise with the pros, they you know, they play it longer because they've got a certain acumen and a certain ability that allows them to do that, and a mentality that goes with it. So, you know, for me, I think if you think about it, Rob, I spoke to some coaches in Toronto a few weeks ago, and there were 900 coaches in the ACC. And I mentioned to them, if every one of those coaches over a five-year period coached 20 different players, within that five-year period, they would have touched 90,000 kids. And of those 90,000 kids, based on averages, 14 will make it to the National Hockey League out of 90,000. So my strong suggestion to them and question to them was, who do you coach at the end of the day, and what's after the equal sign? My intention, my full intention here, is to make sure that Canada is still revered as one of the great populations on the planet for the type of people we develop, the type of geography we have, of course, but our demographic more than anything else. And I think hockey has to play a significant role in making sure that we continue to improve upon what is already a very valuable and respected citizenship, but through the game of hockey.
If I'm hearing you right, one of the great, and you've been to, I'm sure, a million coaching conferences, every once in a while you pick up something. And I was at one, and I heard, you know, it's not my job to create one NHL player. It's my job to create 20 beer league players who are still playing the game at 40.
Yeah.
Am I simplifying?
Or? No, I think that's bang on. It should be cradle to grave game.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, at the beginning, it's funny how at the beginning of this whole process of being a hockey player, kids get into the discover of the game and play the initiation hockey and acquire the skills. And then it kind of moves through the different segments, if you will, the different age groups. And at the other end of all of this, even for the NHL player, there's adult recreation hockey. And it's interesting how they come back to what the common denominator has been all along, and that's the love of playing hockey.
Spent some time with some soccer people and baseball people recently and realized that there's a lot of commonality. There's a lot of concerns in athletics. So let me ask you about maybe the hot button topic these days, and that's specificity. You know, should a player, you know, play one sport 12 months a year? At what age should they do that? Are you willing to wade into that debate and conversation?
Darn right. I don't think we should be playing one sport all year long. I think we should be a multi-sport culture. I think activity for children right now is paramount. I think that we're going to have serious mental health problems and physical health problems in the next decade to 15 years if we don't get kids out playing something anyway, regardless of what it is. And I think those that can multi-sport have an opportunity to enjoy maybe the independence of playing tennis and the collaborative play of playing soccer. You know, the beauty of playing hockey with the outstanding coaching leadership that they get there and the thrill of hitting a golf ball. I just think that that's living. And I don't think focusing in one compartment whereby it's only hockey for 11 and a half months of the year and you get 2 months off as a, or 2 weeks off, I should say, as a 13-year-old makes an awful lot of sense to me.
Do we see burnout?
Absolutely you do. And you see it at 12 years of age. You know, and where's that coming from? You know, I think we all have to take, adults have to take responsibility for that. I don't know that the kid is the one that's always making the choice to play, you know, for that period of time. To me, it's someone else, you know, a driving force, whether it's mom and dad or your coach or peer pressure, maybe from other parents or other families that are kind of pursuing the dream, if you will. So yeah, there's burnout, no question about that. And I think one of the ways to avoid that is to have a look at our schedule and identify with how we might be able to deliver the game differently. And if we can come up with a solution there and look at multi-sport activity for kids, I think we're really onto something.
Opportunity here, though, to pick your brain from your former life as, as an NHL coach. You would have seen kind of the evolution of the, you know, the player. The Jerome McGinley was a baseball catcher in the summer who was an NHL, or a hockey player in the fall to the 12-month-a-year player coming to the NHL. Did you see a difference in the athlete? Were they as well-rounded?
Of this latest generation, I'd have to say no.
Yeah.
And what I also saw, and I think, you know, there's a couple of things to speak to on that, Rob. I think one of the reasons for that is that parenting has changed. The athlete has changed because parenting has changed. So as parents, we place different value on different parts of a kid's existence. And oftentimes with pro sport, it's about getting to the highest level and making a lot of money and, you know, getting the notoriety and all that kind of stuff. And away you go. And then beyond that, the problem I see, too, is that when we don't measure up, when we fail at that, it's problematic. And so kids in dressing rooms, and believe me, there's 23 CFOs in every dressing room in the National Hockey League. When it's not quite going their way, they have a real difficult time in coping with that. My suggestion to them is if you were a multi-sport athlete and you played all kinds of disciplines, you know, as a youngster growing up and even stayed in tune with that as an adult, you're probably developing the coping skills that allows you to maybe understand why the coach is making this particular move. And since we're talking about the NHL, they might have a better chance of getting it.
Back to your current position. I was going to use the word reconcile, but I think that gives the wrong connotation. How do you view things like spring hockey, hockey academies? You know, again, I talked about it. Boy, we've seen a big push in the last 10 years, the last decade of these things. How do you see that from your standpoint?
I'll call the hockey academies kind of the entrepreneur, if you will, and I think they're vital to the success of the game. I think they keep us honest. I think we have to, when they spring up all over the country, as they have started to, we have to look at ourselves as Hockey Canada, as minor hockey associations, and ask ourselves, why is that happening? What are we not delivering on that maybe these groups can and do well? And I think, so we've got to pay attention to that. I think the most important thing, though, and I can completely endorse the idea of you know, your academies and your sports schools, those types of things, as long as it's driven for the right reasons, and that's the player, the kid, the child, if that becomes the mantra, the mandate, you know, and you do everything you possibly can to make that experience outstanding for that person, then I'm all in. You know, for me, I'd like to see that the legislation, the governance, you know, of the game still goes through their doors too and not independent of Hockey Canada, quite honestly, because this protects, we're here to protect everybody. And I think that's important. When it comes to things like spring hockey, to me, that's just an elongation of the hockey season. And I don't have a problem with hockey schools. I don't have a problem at all with hockey schools that have another sport, another discipline in them, for example. I just have a real problem with the hockey schedule and families choosing to make it 10 and 11 months long as opposed to what it really should be, and that's maybe 7 or 8.
Well, since you brought up the schedule, should we be married to a September to, you know, March, April schedule, or is it time maybe to look at adjusting that schedule, a calendar that we traditionally have followed?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I think the one thing that we can do, and I think it, in my mind at least, it kind of endorses the idea of being a multi-sport athlete, you know, and in the recreation stream, never mind the profession or the high competitive stream. But I think you can do dual registrations. I think you can. Basketball is played in the wintertime, as is hockey. So why don't we have dual registrations where you register for both? And you might play in a month. You might play your first week of hockey, your second week's basketball, your third week's hockey, your fourth week's backup basketball. That's going to shorten the season up a little bit. I think it's going to give kids the opportunity to take that team concept approach, if you will, to another discipline, basketball, for example, and play something else. And I think that's good. And you know, maybe it's a month of hockey and a month of something else, volleyball. Maybe it's a month of basketball, another month of hockey. Maybe that goes through a 12-month cycle. I'm not sure. But the bottom line is we have to look at how we deliver the game, you know, and what this schedule looks like. Because time is really, really important to families nowadays, you know, and not that it ever hasn't been, but it's really critical nowadays because we seem to be living this game of life at a pretty high pace.
You are the big sport. You know, if you want the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and a couple of years ago, very disappointed in Tennis Canada with a line of commercials they ran that not every kid wants to play hockey. Is there a role for Hockey Canada, is there a role for you to kind of bring other sports together on this message? Is there a role to kind of create some sort of multi-front?
100%. You know, I'll beat that drum. The drum that I'll beat first and foremost is to make sure that kids are active. Sport is hurting in Canada, you know, and thank God we've got some iconic kids playing basketball and tennis, for example, that really inspire others to do the same thing. But that begs the question of do we multi-sport, do we multi-discipline? And my answer to that is, of course we do. There's no question about that. But first and foremost is the kid. I'm a Canadian, 100%, always will be, always have been, and that's that. And you know, I've competed for my country enough to know how deep that runs. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of my country. I'm proud of where I'm from. I'm proud of the people in Canada. I've traveled all over the world a number of times, and we are absolutely revered as a population, you know, and as a country in this world. And I think that hockey has had an awful lot to do with that by the nature of the types of people that we grow into professions, whether it is that teacher, you know, or that bus driver or, you know, the physiotherapist, whatever, as well as our NHL players, for example, and in lots of ways and for the right reasons, the women playing hockey at the professional level too. These are great people, Rob. You know, and that for me is first and foremost. What is hockey doing with our culture? What are they doing to add to, fortify, illuminate the Canadian culture to make sure that we can continue to stand up and be real proud of who we are because of the game?
A couple of years ago in this city, we went through the debate about body checking in Peewee, and we can get into that. But one of the things that came out of it for me was this conversation and kind of education I got about pond hockey, about, you know, recreational hockey. Tom, is that someplace we need to go more seriously to make sure that, you know, maybe we have an elite stream, but we also have a lower commitment? Because I know I'm preaching the choir here, but when the old Western Center of Excellence was down at the Dome, I used to go and watch Dave King films of him talking in the 80s about the pyramid, about, you know, lots of kids, and then as we get older, we lose them. Yep. That hasn't changed, but it's been there for a while.
Yeah, exactly, and to me, that's the recreation stream. Yeah. You know, and sometimes we can overcoach, we can overindulge ourselves thinking that, you know, we have to be so organized, you know, and by doing so, we paralyze the player. You know, we take away the freedom to play. And it's interesting when you watch the highly talented players at the best levels in the world and around the world play the game. It's interesting how they just seem to have that freedom in their minds to do what they want to do, and that's what makes them special. I remember telling my teams, you know, we can defend that system, but we might not be able to defend that mind. So creativity is a very, very important part of the game, and it encourages that creativity in your life. I mean, you know, I don't know if you're a creative hockey player and you've been given the allowance to do that. My guess is that you're probably going to be a pretty good engineer, or, you know, along the way. Who knows? But, you know, I think you're right, Rob. I think sometimes we've just got to get out of the way, you know. And I know we can both think back, me a lot further back than you, but I can remember going to the rink in Cranbrook and I couldn't wait to get on the ice and hated getting off the ice because all we did was play.
Yeah. How do we get back to that? Everybody says it.
Yeah.
Everybody says it.
I think there's a couple of things that we've got to recognize. In order for it to be a lifetime sport for people, this cradle-to-grave component on the recreation side, you do have to arm children with some skills that allow them to do that for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. So in as much as we've got to give freedom, we also have to provide the ability for a kid to play the game with the proper skating skills, the proper puck skills, being able to understand what freedom feels like, you know, as a player within that, with those skill sets, if you will. So you still have to, you know, you still have to kind of put the skis on and maybe take some instruction on the bunny hill for a little while before you tackle the big hill and, you know, you're all over the map, which certainly has happened to me a number of times. But I get your point and I accept it completely and I agree with it, quite honestly. But we do have to make sure that, you know, that we give the kids the skill set in order to play the game and have fun with it and keep up to their little peer group and have fun playing a collaborative game and all those types of things where we, in unison, we can just go out and play. If we don't do that, then I think there's certainly the opportunity for a youngster to be kind of turned off right away because they're not having enough success early enough.
They're not linked, but I do want to ask you, you brought it up, cost, also safety. Mm-hmm. We were going through that at every level. Mm-hmm. Do you have things you'd like to do in terms of costs? Is there things we need to get out there? Because I'm a parent of two dancers, and mm-hmm. I do find it a little offensive that hockey takes the brunt of it's expensive. I can tell you there's a lot of things that are expensive for kids these days.
Yes, and if your dancers are girls, as were mine, I can relate.
You know exactly what I'm going through.
Yes, I do. So, you know what? That's a function of our society. That's a function of living in the free world, you know, and there are all kinds of choices that families, you know, make with respect to what their children are going to do and how they're going to participate as a family. It's not just about the child, for example, that's staying active, but so too is the whole family who drives them to dance, you know. But at the end of the day, Rob, I really believe that, you know, certainly hockey with a number of programs, our Bauer first shift program mm-hmm. with Mark, you know, it's unbelievable. I think they're going to be in 30 communities across the country giving out equipment and getting them playing hockey. We have others like that. The Jumpstart program, you know, is another example of that, you know, with a huge input in terms of over, I think, probably close to 1,000 kids a year, you know, over a five-year period. We'll play hockey thanks to the Jumpstart program, and that's Canadian Tire all the way. And you know, you've got to admire that. Bill Comrie's program, equipment yep. drive program, is sensational. You know, so there's no reason why we can't, you know, have that going, you know, across the country and making sure kids are playing the game. That said, we don't have to go buy Sidney Crosby's skates, you know, or the types of gloves Sidney Crosby wears, or the stick that Sidney Crosby uses. There's lots of opportunity to buy all of that at the junior level, if you will, for a younger age group that costs at least a third the money, you know, if not much, much more than that. And so that's important. And I think, too, we've got to understand that as parents, we don't need to drive our kids or involve ourselves in a program that thinks that it's really important to drive 500 or 600 miles on a Friday to play a couple of games on Saturday, maybe another one on Sunday, and then drive all the way home and incur the cost of the gas, incur the cost of hotel rooms, incur the cost of meals. You know, there's lots of hockey to be played right here in Calgary. You take a 40-minute drive only because of traffic, not because of distance, and you play the game. I mean, come on.
What about safety? I mean, obviously, you know, concussions is one. I know we were talking about, you know, playing other sports, mm-hmm. which I think helps with that. But mm-hmm. in terms of safety, you know, Tom, what are your concerns?
Same as any mom and dad, you know, pick an injury for sure. But, I, you know, the first and foremost and the one that's most important on everyone's mind, literally, is concussions. Mm. I think Hockey Canada has done a fabulous job with educating parents, coaches, administrators. You know, there's lots of applications via, you know, your handheld, you know, via anything you've got that, you know, helps you understand the protocol, concussion protocol, how to play safe. The respect in sport part of our coaching components is vital to the safety of the players in the game. You know, I'm guessing it might be safer to play hockey than maybe drive from here to Medicine Hat. I'm not sure. You know, if you just look at the numbers, my guess is it's still a pretty safe game.
Yeah.
Kids play hockey because it's fast, it's fun, it's demanding, it's got a certain physical aspect to it. You know, that you've got to be in tune with your body. You know, those things are good. That's holistic. That's developing the entire player. You know, and at the end of the day, the entire person. And you know, we can the stuff kids are wearing nowadays is bulletproof pretty much anyway. You know, but I don't know that we can get to the point where, you know, you take away from what and really helps a youngster kind of understand his body, you know, and the whole dynamic of movement and you know, on the ice. And I think, you know, as much as I say all of that, safety is in the forefront of our minds. There's no question, as it should be for any sport.
Tom, are you prepared to recruit? Are you prepared to go out and and bring new Canadians or, you know, players not out in this sport right now into the, and this is, because if you are, it's kind of unique, right, for this sport in this country.
Have to. That's, you know what, if we want new Canadians to join hockey, they're not going to tap on our door. They're intimidated. You know, they see this greatness on the ice, you know, most nights of the week now on television and from a number of different outlets, but there's an awful lot of hockey out there to watch. Yeah. And they love it. They look at it and they identify with it and then they're scared of it. You know, the new Canadians, they don't even know how to put skates on, half the time. And you know, so we have to understand that and respect that they're coming to Canada because they want to. They want to live in Canada. They want to be Canadians. And one of the best ways to do that is to identify with the game of hockey. But you know what? We have to tap on their door. And we have to say, you know, are you interested? Because we'd love to have you. You know, and in a literal sense, that might take... Our next summit might have to be where we talk to 2,000 new Canadians, you know, on the floor of the ACC and say, listen, come play. We'll take care of you. You know, you'll have the time of your life. We'll make sure. We'll do everything we possibly can to make this game so fun for you. You'll feel very much a part of the fabric of Canada.
One last one on development, and that is, and I understand there's a time and a place, but from what I'm hearing, you are about to have begun to make a very big commitment to development in terms of more resources and more people. Can you give us a little sneak peek of what's coming?
Well, you know, certain, internally, actually, we've, you know, in some of my restructuring that I've done, I've shored up the development side of our operation from a staffing perspective so that we can, in fact, get out. You know, this is not just on a couple of people that, you know, this is a big demographic and a big, big, big country. You know, so we have to make sure that the branches across the country realize that this help is here. You know, that we are here to help them. We are here to help them drive the game forward and you know, make sure that it appeals to people for the right reasons. So from a development perspective, we've added staffing personnel for sure and here in Calgary and back east. That being said, we also have to make sure that there's a better linkage between ourselves and the branches, you know, and the volunteers in those branches.
Right.
What oftentimes happens, Rob, is that there's a disconnection or a misinterpretation sometimes of programming, you know, and it's not all driven from Hockey Canada. We all have to understand that there's an opportunity to learn, gain, and develop the game through sort of the give and take, if you will, almost like a symbiotic process where it works both ways. You know, and our branches have a great deal of experience, you know, with the development of the game and understand probably in most cases more clearly than we do because they have boots on the ground, you know, and those boots on the ground are come in the form of your minor hockey association. So it's a function of certainly getting out there with more manpower now, paying very close attention to, you know, not having to develop more programs based generally speaking, but to do a better job of what we have there and to really show a marriage between ourselves, you know, the branches, the minor hockey associations, and as much as I possibly can, you know, is to continue to get out there and be heard and sell the virtues of grassroots development hockey first and foremost for both genders, you know, and continue to make that my mantra.
If you don't mind, just a couple of quick ones on the high performance end of things. You inherit the program right at the beginning of a quadrennial, next set of Olympics. I know there's some questions on the men's side, but in terms of an overall thought on high performance, Tom, where are we at right now?
Well, you know, it's a global game, as the cliche would suggest, and that's probably what it is now. It's very much cliche, but the game is played around the world and very well. You know, by lots of federations and they do an outstanding job of developing, you know, their programs as well to the point where they are high performers in this sport. And we all have to understand that just because it all basically started here and we've certainly been at the podium our share of times, there are others that are capable of doing the same thing. So basically, what do you gain, you know, when you don't quite measure up and you come up short and you don't win? What do we gain by that? And making sure that we're honest about that, own our performance, take responsibility for it, you know, but how do we improve upon that? And how do we make it still very enlightening for the participants? And then with that being said, allow that to continue to motivate us to be the best in the world. Because I think if you don't get an opportunity to identify, at least viscerally, you know, with high performance and excellence and championships and being the best, you know, you lose something, you know, in that very fabric that I talk about in terms of being Canadian, we have to identify with being the best. Because it allows the lawyer and the teacher and that physiotherapist to feel exactly the same way in their line of work. I'm going to be the best, the very best in the world at this. And I don't think that does any harm to society.
But what you as an organization, I think, have that's a little bit unique is you're coming off, certainly being around the under-17s this year, I saw how much the Olympic success was being translated to them, the Canadian ways, mm-hmm. the T-shirts I saw. Mm-hmm. You have arguably the most definitive, dominant performance by a hockey team on the men's side. And then on the women's side, you may have had one of the best games ever played.
I agree.
Boy, you've got something to inspire and to sell in the programs.
No question, you know, and that's certainly the exciting part about high performance, and you're doing it with sort of new faces, at least at the under 17 level on an mm-hmm. annual basis. You're under 18s, you start to see some similar faces coming back, and of course with the World Junior Championship, that's the very same thing, and the epitome of all of that is, you know, is the Olympic Games, and that's what we're all about in our minds as Hockey Canada. It's all about development. It's all about grassroots. There's no question about that. That is one stream. And then it's also about being the very best in the world at playing this game, and there's nothing wrong with that either.
Still heavy lifting to do on the women's side globally?
Yeah, I think so. But you know what? Mel Davidson is just an incredible person. She is so dedicated to the women's game, and certainly here in Canada, of course, but around the world. She's a superstar in my mind with respect to where the women's game is and where it needs to go. We just have to find her more leadership help, mm-hmm. quite honestly. You know, women that are willing to get in and do the same thing, and not necessarily at the sort of the high-profile level, but get in and coach kids in hockey, you know, the ex-national team players, you know, from Canada, if those girls, and I know they do, you know, in some cases, at least if they come back and dedicate themselves to little girls playing the game, you know, and just really inspire them to carry on and have fun. And just, it's no different than the guys, just go play, you know, and then those young ladies will grow into what we hope will be the, you know, the next leaders of the game in Canada, because we have an obligation to make sure that, you know, strong leadership exists too, you know, in the female game, never mind the men's game. And in order to do that, we have to commit to that as well in terms of growth and development.
Best kept secret in hockey is sledge hockey, is it not?
Oh man,
isn't it?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. It reminds me. I did a Special Olympics thing when I was going to university. I was the student president for the Special Olympics in the community I was living in, and sledge hockey does the same thing for me as that did. Then it just grabs you. It just grabs you and it won't let go. It's you just can't help but be so engaged by you know, the character of these people, mm-hmm. How proud they are, you know, to play hockey. You know, for sure. And if you talk about the high performance athletes in sledge and putting on that jersey, that means as much to them as any Canadian I know, for sure. And the fact that they've got to overcome, you know, so much to offer so much is absolutely amazing.
Just the one on the men's side of the Olympics, what's your situation right now as an organization? I suppose somewhat of a holding pattern until you determine what the NHL does, but do you have contingencies mm-hmm. already?
I don't know if we have contingencies, you know, in place. I think that there's enough experience in this building and around the country to make sure that should it come to pass where the NHLers don't go to the Olympic Games, I think we can react real quickly to that and do the right thing. You're right, though. It is out there. It's on the horizon for sure, and something we have to kind of pay attention to. But there's so much to happen in the meantime, you know, and the NHL kind of holds the cards, if you will. But we're Hockey Canada. And there's been great leadership here in the past. I can only hope that it stays the same for the future. We'll respond appropriately.
There's a romantic notion in my mind that I take advantage of having here. No chance we could ever get back to a men's national team that barnstorms the small communities, plays Team Norway and things like that. We miss that, don't we, Tom?
I do. You know, I hope there's at least a small portion of the population out there that does as well. You know, it'd be great to be able to do that in both men's and women's hockey.
Yeah.
It'd be so good. You know, and it, you know, you go back to Father Bauer and who was a huge influence on me, and then of course Dave with the way he went about things with the program, another huge influence on me. You know, and then my turn to coach the national team. Those were very, very special moments to kind of identify with, and we took the game to the world. You know, we took the game to every corner of this country for sure. But we took the game to the world, and nobody had a clue who the name bars on the back were. They didn't care. It was the logo on the front, and Canada was here to play hockey. And it was fabulous. I don't know that there's been a better ambassador for the game on behalf of Canada than those national teams.
Those are big nights every night, right? You go to Estevan or Fort McMurray or Pincher Creek. That was a big deal.
It was a big night, and then it was a community night. Yeah. And after those games, there was usually a big community buffet in the local recreation center or whatever, and both teams would be lined up and going through the buffet and sitting at tables with just the general population and just having a wonderful time with the game. And, I think about that from time to time.
You've been so generous with your time. Two that I have to ask you, because you brought it up. Tell me about celebrating the game. This is a priority for you. Any ideas on how you get to that?
I think talk about it, you know, and we've talked about a number of different things here today, but talk about the good things that are getting done in the game. You know, our coaching program is unbelievable. When you think about the coaching certification in this country and how by going through your safety component to your coaching certification, the component of respect in hockey, I just think of Sheldon Kennedy and just how much of a superstar this guy is, on the stage. And for every coach that gets certified and goes through these modules, if you will, it's not just the 20 little people that he's coaching, you know, in that particular hockey season that benefit by that. The whole community does. If you're a community of 10,000 people or 15,000 people or 50,000 people, every coach that does this and gets certified, you know, is enhancing the entire population and ability to be safe, you know, and just enjoy a certain lifestyle. So to me, that we should celebrate that. We should celebrate the fact that, that this game has created some of the best Canadians, that we've ever seen because they chose to play hockey as young people, didn't play the National Hockey League, didn't play competitive hockey or whatever. But there's a ton of examples of people that just loved playing hockey. Our prime minister loved to play hockey, and who cares about the political affiliation? He played hockey and he loved it, and he still does, and he happens to be the leader of our country. That's impressive stuff, you know. And we need to look at those types of things. Just the growth of the women's game, is sensational. I think when you look at, the female game. Huge, of course. I think the fact that new Canadians are playing the game, they love the game, they embrace the game, I think that's something that we can celebrate. And all of these things can be grown to a greater degree, of course. But there's certainly enough to celebrate that we have to remember to step up and say we're doing a great job here.
The last one, and it's more of the news side of things, tough week. We lost two coaching legends. I'll ask you about the most obvious one last. Victor Tikhonov, as a man who coached internationally, coached against those influenced teams, how good a coach was he? We knew of the legend, but I'm curious, your business of coaching, how good a coach was he?
He scared the hell out of me every time. It's like coaching against Scotty in the NHL. Every time I coached against Victor, I thought, let's not embarrass ourselves here. Like, don't just chase the puck around. Like, we have to have it ourselves from time to time. A great coach, very, very regimented, as you can imagine, and very to the point. But he certainly had his teams playing a great game of hockey, and some of the best athletes that have ever played this game certainly have come under his tutelage, to say the least. So it was, I always felt that way, but I also felt it a real privilege, Rob, to coach against Victor, as with others certainly in my history, in my past. But certainly Victor's one of those guys he certainly had your pencil sharp because he was that good, and you couldn't stand in awe of the man or he'd feed you your lunch. And so the bottom line was that I was that in awe. Coached my ass off because of it, of course, but very, very much appreciated the fact that I had an opportunity to stand behind the bench opposite him and coach against him.
And Pat Quinn, of course, could feed you your lunch in a different way, but...
I'm sure there are times he would like to have done that to me too.
Just a thought on a guy. Ah,
man, you're right. Yesterday was a tough day, but he gave me my first job in the NHL. And I remember the interview to this day. We sat in his office for probably 8 hours. I think he went through probably 8 cigars. But we had it was outstanding. It was just an outstanding. It was like sitting there talking. You're talking to a legend, and you're trying to get a job with this guy. And as it turns out, he hires me, and just a wonderful, wonderful human being. He's everything everybody's talking about that you hear right now in terms of just the presence of the man, for sure. A big, kind-hearted fellow that treated people with respect, gave you every chance to get it right, let you fall down a few times, as he did with me in Vancouver. Put himself in a position where he got fired before I did, which is asinine when you think about it. Pat Quinn getting fired before Tom Rennie in Vancouver. Are you kidding me? But that's the type of guy he was. There's no way he was going to take the bullet, because he believed in me. I think that might sum up Pat as much as anything. He believes in people.
Having fun.
I love it. Every day is great. It's different. It's a different landscape. No question about that. I missed the coaching room and the fraternity and, nailing Babs socks to the floor when he tries to pick him up or whatever. I miss that kind of stuff. But I love my job, Rob. I'm so grateful for it and feel honored to have the opportunity.